I'm awake.
Good. Welcome, everyone. We appreciate your patience. We appreciate you being here.
Yes.
Sometimes it's hard to put a bunch of commissioners and members of the board all in one area at one time. It's hard to get us all together. It's like a bunch of cats. We're just going every which way. So, but I do appreciate you here, and I appreciate the patience of those that are in attendance in the audience. Let's stand. We have a flag here on our, what is that, an iPad or computer?
They have a flag in the other room.
Would you lead us in the pledge?
Follow up to me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey, Chair. Is it legal to have a pledge of an American flag displayed on something made in China?
Well, I went to the U.S. Congress.
Is that legal?
U.S. Congress.
Okay.
Just talking about your device.
Sorry. Got it.
Yeah. Important.
Before we join the flag, not after.
You'd wear your suit coat with the pin.
Then you know what? That's a challenge right now. Maybe we ought to look at making a flag factory right in rural Utah.
In Skyhoopy.
If it can ship by FedEx or UPS, we can make it in, in Esclan.
And if we had the meat processing plant, which we're desperately in need of also, then we would have the dye for the red color, right, available right there.
Just thinking.
Yeah, I agree.
Use everything.
All right, let's get us back on track now that
Are we off track? What?
We're trying to start late and early here.
I was going to step.
I know some time to go.
Because I don't know how long the commissioners
I do have to review the CID ones, though, before present those.
Okay, we're going to, Nate, we're going to have you introduce our new planners.
So we hired two new planners. Come up here, guys. Melissa Gamble, she was a planner and CDBG administrator. She left us to go work with the state. So, and then we were able to get some GLPB money to do planning in the rural areas of our region. And so let's go with Cody first. Brag about yourself a little.
Cody Christensen. I used to be at UBAG. I was ran the CDBG and CIB program there for 10 years. Then I was a school teacher for a while down here in Washington County. And then now I'm back. So.
Thanks, Cody.
I'm Kevin Smedley. I worked for 25 years in Southern Nevada, and I retired. And after a couple of years, I saw this opportunity, and so I'm excited to help the communities do their general plans.
So he actually worked with the rural communities throughout Southern Nevada, so he comes with a ton of experience. Both of them here.
Glad to have
him. Glad to have him. Great. Do we have the ability to be able to send them out to each community, go to their maybe their city council meetings, get to know the mayors, get to know the city councils, and see how we can actually reach out and help our communities?
Exactly.
We are in the process.
How many cities and towns do we have?
We have 38 cities, so we're going to be visiting all of the rural ones. We're not going to the St. George metro area. We won't be going to Cedar
because they don't listen anyway.
Because they have planning staff, but all the rest of the ones we've met in Beaver. We've met with all the Beaver County communities. We haven't gone to the city council, but we've met with the community staff.
So I want you to keep your mayors and city council.
Yeah. To clarify, this is not a circuit for Kevin. It's not a circuit rider planner like you had in the county before. This is specific to a legislative funding for a period of 5 years that we're to do five or six, it's flexible, general plans per year for the next 5 years. So we'll get 25 of those done, or maybe up to 30, depending on how many you can do in 1 year, for the smaller rural communities through this prioritization process, through a survey that they are conducting right now to determine where the greatest need is, which ones need to be done first, because some are going to have to wait 2 or 3 or 4 years to get a general plan updated. But that's better than not ever getting them updated. So that's what this position is for.
Can we get, as a AOG board, can we get a priority of where you're going to, you know, who you're going to knock off first?
Yeah, we're doing these surveys, and then we'll set the priority of what we're doing. We'll let you know.
Great. We look forward to seeing some of that.
This is something for a long time that we've hoped to have, is the ability of going out and doing general plans. We used to do those in the past when we had enough staff and enough ability through our CDBG funding and that to do that. The legislature has finally seen suit to fund a planner in each region to go out and do general plans. That will be his sole task, not other stuff, but doing general plans.
I'd really like to see us out in the communities that we serve, yeah, and being out there. Listen, you know, that's the people that we serve need to see us and need to know that we're there, and we can do good things for being out there. So that's your challenge, okay?
Right.
Thanks. We appreciate you.
Hey, Nate, so if we want to contact these gentlemen, just call down to the office and say, hey, we want to talk to Cody or Kevin.
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
Very good. Okay. Minutes, August 10th, 2022, steering committee meeting, review and approve.
Move to approve.
Have a motion. Have a second. Any further discussion?
Mayor Davis on the second.
Okay. Yep. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Also, we want to welcome those that are online with us. Who's there besides Andy?
They're muted.
Okay. Well, anyway, we appreciate them taking the time to be with us, even if it's with Zoom. Zoom has changed our world immensely.
Commissioner, could we move the CIB? I think that's the only other vote that we need at the board.
Okay, let's go to review the CIB.
All right, so we have four applications from our region in this trimester, the second trimester of the CIB program year. The first project is one from Brian Head Town. They're applying to do a water line project, which is a combination of providing water, but the main reason is to provide fire flows in an area. And I apologize, I did not get the pages numbered again. Not enough time in the day. But they're going to put in about 3,000 feet of 8-inch water line. It's to put fire hydrants in and to provide for fire protection up in an area known as the Snowshoe and Toboggan Fire Protection Area. So you remember the Brian Head Fire very well. This is going to help areas that are at a fire risk have fire protection. They're requesting a $355,000 as a grant from CIB. The CIB board will actually make a decision on how the funding is made. That is the request. They have other funding in this project as well as local dollars into there.
They're asking for all grants?
They are asking for that. But
they're not coming with anything?
They are.
No, they are?
Yeah. The total project cost is $857,000
okay.
On here, and they're putting in either through themselves or through other funding sources the remainder of the $500,000. So that's the first project.
Okay.
The second project is from the Five County Association of Governments. Other than going there and receiving like the other rural areas receive, which is the RPP, the Rural Planning Program funding, which funds two planners in each region or a planner and a half, essentially. We have not been to the CIB for 20 years. Back in 2002, We went to CID. John Williams was our executive director at the time. I got an $80,000 grant to buy some built-in furniture. It's our steel case cubicle that we have in our open office format. That's the only money we've ever gone to CID for at all. This building that we are in now, our owned building down there in St. George, was funded with community development block grant funding. We actually were able to build it for a little less than $900,000 back in 2002, and it's just shy of 10,000 square feet. It appraised for $2.75 million, I believe it was, the replacement cost for that. It is not fully functional for us because we've had more staff, more storage needs, and we want to rearrange the building, turn what we call our library, which is really a storage room. It has been forever. It's where we store our minutes. It's where we store aging services, products that they take out to the clients, like the Ensure product that they take out in cases, and that has to be climate-controlled storage. So what we're proposing to do, and also we have security issues, and in the application is in your packet there. What we're proposing to do is build a building behind ours that matches our building, because we're in a complex where you just can't put a tough shed back behind there. It has to be something that fits in. So we're going to have a building built behind there that's approximately 300 square feet that will be storage, climate-controlled storage for all those things that we're currently storing in the building. And we're going to turn that library area into two fixed offices and four flexible cubicle spaces. So that'll give us six more places where staff can be there. Where I see the increases in the coming years, over the next 20 years, will be aging services. And those case managers are only in the office a very short period of the day. Then they go out and they're with clients all day. Then they come back and put their information into their computer system so that they build Medicare, Medicaid, those various things. They have to do their reports on what they did that day for the billing purposes. So we're looking at, and we also have a major problem with our sewer pipe in the building. In that 20 years, the sewer pipe through the length of the building has sunk down in, and we just, what did we spend just recently? About
$15,000
to get it functional, but that didn't fix the problem. It's going to recur. So we're looking at a total cost of all the projects that we're putting into this of $739,000, and we're going to be requesting that as a grant. Our AOG does not have a revenue stream. We're just in that situation that the other AOGs are, but we're not going and asking for a new building. We have a nice building. The building's functional. It's just not fully functional. This will make it functional, I hope, for the next 20 years.
Just get some porta potties.
We may have to.
120-degree weather.
So then the next one is from the Kane County local building authority. What the project there is to build a building that's called the Kane County Community Outreach Center. And what this outreach center will have a number of different functions in there. It'll be the drug court. Let's see, I'll read the things that are in there. There'll be the care and share. Right now the care and share is actually in a tough shed and some containerized cargo units that are up at the old senior center location up on the hill. It's very dangerous. It's very it's not appropriate for a food pantry. So this new building will include the food pantry, the care and share that's run by Kane County. It'll have the Kane County Drug Court. It'll have the Kane County Office of Tourism and Events. And it'll be the building and grounds maintenance building for storing stuff that the Kane County, things like sprinkler parts, electrical equipment, that kind of stuff that Kane County has. So it's a multi-purpose community outreach center. And they are requesting $2,800,000 for this project, approximately $2.8 million. They're requesting that as a $2.5 million loan and a $340,000 grant for that. So that's a project that I think is a very good project that they're willing to take, or they're asking for most of that as a loan. The final project is from Parowan City, And this project is for a Parowan City new pool. It's a pool and 17,000 square foot building with 8 lanes of a competition lap pool, health and wellness pool, and it'd be a fitness center as well. And they are asking for $10,960,000 from CIB. They're asking for a $3.3 million loan, and they're asking for a $7.6 million grant. Now, as I mentioned, the CIB board, and they have a funding tool that they use, the board will make the determination of what the actual funding is. This is what their ask is. And I just have to remind that each of these things are asks. This is what they put in their application. Hopefully, that they sharpen the pencil and said, this is what we can do or what we can't do. I don't know that for a fact. So this is one that's...
money is tight right now.
Money's tight. So those are the four applications. This board has either supported, remained neutral, or not supported projects. You can either take them separately like we did previously for certain projects. And
does Commissioner Gant have anything to say?
Commissioner Gant, you want to say anything about your project?
I think Gary did a good job as I did for describing that. He's exactly right. It just goes right there behind our Canal Center building, across the parking lot. We've got the property.
Okay.
I support it. We're excited. We could really use the space for our characters of joke. It is in metal built in cargo containers.
Yeah.
Kind of sad.
Okay. You want to do it individually?
With touches for an office.
You want to do it?
I move that the board we support the application of all four.
Okay, I have a motion to support for all four.
I'll second.
Okay, I have a second. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, moving forward.
Chair, a quick question. At the bottom here, Parowan said they're also working with the Larry H. Miller Group and the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity. Granted, we're recommending. What follow-up do we have if they come through? You see what I'm saying? So instead of just saying, oh, well, we got money from the governor, we got money from the Larry H. Miller Group, now we're going to add on a 20 bowling lanes. You see what I'm saying?
The board, CIB, will discuss that.
Yeah. Okay.
And
this is the proposal.
They are actually on the agenda next Thursday over in Moab, so this will be... They are.
Okay.
Well, no, excuse me, the 3rd of November. I was just changing your schedule for you. November 3rd,
location.
Which is in 2 weeks from tomorrow in Moab. So.
Okay.
Who seconded that?
Yeah, Tyler.
Okay. All right, what do you want? So where are we going to go next then?
We can go the broadband.
Okay, let's Utah Broadband Center statewide digital connectivity plan.
So if Commissioner Gant needs to drop off, he can. But
okay.
He can't. He can't. Okay.
The Gant can't.
I need to drop off?
If you need to, you can stay on.
Because we don't have an action item.
We're done with all action items. Yeah.
Oh. Good to see you, Commissioner. You look like you're in Top Gun right there or something.
Right? I got the shades.
Yeah.
I'm in my jet fighter.
Yeah. Keep it under 180.
Keep on doing it.
Fueled by coal.
Keep doing it.
Well, thank you for having us today. I'm joined here by Rebecca Dillick. She is the executive director of the Utah Broadband Office.
Thank you.
And underneath the Governor's Office of Economic Development. My name is Katie Williams. I am part of the team that was brought on board to help put together the statewide digital connectivity plan. I was really excited to hear about your CIB funds applications, and specifically the one in Kane County would be a really good fit for some of the sub grantee funding that we have coming from the Infrastructure Jobs Act, and specifically the broadband funding that we're going to be getting. That so love it if you could pass along this this information that we're going to share with you to them, because that seems like a really good fit to get some additional funding. And Rebecca also informed me that that can be used as matching money with your in your application. So okay, starting on our
I got to share that first too, to get to the right one.
And I'll talk a little bit more about these sub grants that we have coming up for the money that we'll be receiving from the infrastructure.
There's no sound on this PowerPoint, is there?
No sound. Nope. Just like.
I think they're saying that.
Also joining me online is Vikram. He represents the National Telecommunications and Information Administration. He is our state representative here to kind of act like as a resource for us as we go through planning and implementation of this effort. So what we're here to talk about specifically today is a piece of the IIJA funding that is allocated to aid in broadband infrastructure and expansion in the state. This is a really big opportunity for us to bring connectivity to every home in the state of Utah. Before, when we were offered infrastructure funds through whether it was CARES Act, cities and municipalities were left with the decision, well, it's either do infrastructure projects with this or do broadband. And a lot of the times the answer was infrastructure. This money that we have been allocated is specifically to broadband and broadband infrastructure, and it is specific to that, so you won't have to make that hard choice. This program is kind of divided up into four separate pots. We have the BEAD program, which is Broadband Equity Access and Deployment, which is the biggest chunk of it. That's a $42 billion pot of money, of which our state will receive a minimum allocation of $100 million. We also, within that budget, have the Digital Equity Act, the Tribal Connectivity Program, and then our Middle Mile Broadband Infrastructure. Middle Mile is being handled by UDOT, and the Governor's Office, and Rebecca and I are here today to specifically talk about the BEAD program and a little bit about the Digital Equity Act, which is what will be under our purview. So, kind of going into the next slide, and how this money will be allocated. Like I said, we will get a minimum allocation of $100 million. We stand to receive additional funding based on unserved and underserved areas that we identify in the state. Unserved meaning you have speeds of less than 100 meg download, 3 meg upload, and so that's considered underserved. And a really good comparison to this, and then unserved is 25-3. So I just did a speed test when I got in here to this building, connected to the Wi-Fi. My speeds here were 18-3. So under this location is a underserved area. So,
Can I just clarify that a little bit?
Yeah, please.
So unserved is less than 25.
Yes.
And 3 upload. Under is 100 down and 20 up. So this funding is going to go directly. The measuring tool is the unserved areas, and what those are met then the underserved will be served.
And that's what we are doing right now, is we're in the planning phase of this. You can go to the next one. In order to qualify for this funding and mandated by statute from the state, we are required to put together a digital connectivity plan. This digital connectivity plan will lay out what the next 5 years of broadband expansion looks like in the state and a prioritization of those unserved, underserved areas. This will also be combined with the digital equity plan that is being put together right now through the state library. So we are kind of tracking our efforts concurrently to make this one document that we will then submit to the NTIA for that additional formula-based funding. So right now we've been allocated planning funds from, well, we haven't received them yet, but we will be getting planning funds from the NTIA. And the Broadband Center will be doing some sub-grants of planning funds for digital equity and for broadband connectivity to cities, to counties, to AOGs. And that funding will come available to, it should be soon, so you guys can create your own broadband plan that will then we'll then use to reflect in that overall digital connectivity plan. Also covered in that, those sub-grants will be digital equity efforts, so things like your King County Community Center. They wanted to do a hotspot program. That would be covered, correct?
Potentially.
It's competitive, yes. No guarantees.
So is private funding coming to the table with this? Or is this all just...
So once the grant program is instigated, it will require a 25% match.
So let's go to the next slide about, we're going to jump into just kind of what our schedule looks like. We're hitting the ground running. We've got a lot to do before the spring comes. Our deadline for submitting to NTIA is May of 2023. So between now and then, we have a lot of places to visit and a lot of people to talk to get an idea of what connectivity looks like in your community, what plans you have for your connectivity for your city, so we can match those with infrastructure projects. How we can, you know, learn how we can best help you. So right now, we're coming around to you. We will be doing some county visits specifically to get into really the nitty gritty and the details of what connectivity looks like in your area. And we'll be coordinating those with your hosts, with your county offices and your city offices, and using those as a workshop opportunity to kind of dive into the details and understand what you need in your communities. And then we're also doing a lot of data collection right now and asset mapping. One of the biggest emphasis that we're underway, that's underway right now, is challenges to the FCC maps. The fabric was sent out to each of the counties to look at that coverage map. For these maps, they're talking coverage, so connections to serviceable locations, not necessarily internet speeds. So we want to know, does that map, what the FCC is showing, match up what's actually on the ground? Is that serviceable location that's on that FCC map, is it a house? Is it an apartment? Is it a barn? Is it a rock? Because all of this data will then play into the larger picture of this digital connectivity plan and how we take advantage of this funding. So if you, we'd love for you guys to look at that, give us any feedback or get with us on that. Claire, Warnick, and the office is kind of handling all of that. That's really important for us to have an accurate a map there. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rebecca, we have a challenge process that closes the end of this month?
We're going to submit a statewide map at the end of this month because they'll need some time, and they will be opening the challenge again in December. But our funding that we will actually get here to each of the counties will be determined by these broadband serviceable locations, their accuracy of those, and then eventually what the speeds are at these locations. So we want to make sure we've got them on our map, that they're all being counted. And Brian, just one chatting, your question about private funds. So if you're talking about the grant, as far as the infrastructure, that's the match. But if we're talking about the planning and building this plan, we will have funding for you to apply for. And at this point, there's not a match requirement. So stay tuned.
So this will all take place over the fall, winter, and into the spring, after which we'll submit our five-year plan to the NTIA. They'll review our application, and then they'll make a determination about how much funding we should get for implementation of that plan. And that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where we start building out networks and connecting people. So how you can get involved, I talked a little bit about our approach to community engagement, but this is just the first touch and the first time that you'll see us in your area. We need to hear from all sorts of stakeholders, whether that's your schools, your school boards, your hospitals, your libraries, your county government, your city governments. We'll be doing some county visits that we'll invite you all to. And we'd like to sit down and discuss what does connectivity look like in those communities? What do you need infrastructure-wise to expand connectivity? What does your development look like? What's your economic plans for the future? And then how can we support you in getting everyone connected? So just again, this will happen in the next coming months, and so we will be in touch. There's some contact ways that you can contact us up here. And if you'd like a deeper dive one-on-one discussion before that, please reach out. We would love to set something up and really start cracking away at this mess. So I think that's all that I have, if anybody has any questions. Yeah.
So some of our counties are smaller, may not have the staff to go out and say, or the knowledge, technical background to say, we need this much here and that much there, and that subdivision out there, you're talking residential, or just like you said, hospitals? And
no, it's statewide.
Okay, so we may not have the expertise in some smaller counties to go out and say, you need to go down this road with this size cable, and that you can make a judgment as to how much that's going to cost, because it sounds like you're getting costs from everywhere.
And not necessarily
costs. Or requests.
Yeah, well, it will kind of take a look at like what connectivity looks like on the ground based on, you know, we have, you know, other data collection methods, but then getting that kind of really hyper-localized, like, hey, I go out to the fairgrounds and I get 3G service. You know, that those anecdotes and lived experiences are just as important. But I think we were talking with your planner here when we walked in about some additional assistance for even those FCC map challenges. And I think even, you know, we kind of assume a margin of error with that because of the nature of these places in our state. But any assistance that, you know, the AOG can offer, or you know, your county can offer, or and then eventually with this planning, this additional sub-grant planning money, that'll help with that as well.
And how do we make that list or that plan and submit it to you, or you get it from us?
Something to start with. So we already have a broadband residential availability map. So we collect this from the providers.
Okay.
And so that's at our broadband.utah.gov website, and you can see the map.
Great.
You can very easily put in your address, and you can see who your providers are. You can see what speeds they advertise. Okay. And then this little card we handed out to you, yeah, to test, that we're mapping this also. So there are multiple ways that we are collecting this data. First from the providers, then we're overlaying this with our own speed test. We have access to Quora with their information, and also a national broadband map. So we're just trying to find those little fine gaps, those donut holes that are across the state. We know a lot of the communities, even in the rural areas, you have really good broadband. You have fiber to the home in many locations.
Carbon County, we still lack Boulder somewhere.
Right, and those are what we're looking for, is those little pieces, okay, that we need to identify that, hey, this is where the funding needs to go to. And often, sometimes, you know, communities say, yeah, we've got it, but it's not exactly where we want it. We're getting broadband, we're getting 25.3, but we really want to have 100. Well, first we need to make sure we're, okay, connecting everyone and getting those getting the broadband, that minimum speed. But the goal of the state is to have everyone.
Some of the problem, though, is getting permission, so to speak, to go across federal ground. Here they put this money out, and then they don't want to give you the access to get it across their monument, you know?
Yeah, and that's something, you know, and that's why we partner with the providers. They have been doing this for years, especially the rural providers, and they're very aware of that, and they have their processes. They also partner with UDOT, and they've got some, special right-of-ways in some of these areas, which allows them to access this. So it's a huge partnership. It's not, we're not just saying, hey, you've got to do all this, or you're going to be left in the dark. We've got a lot of it. We are just looking to you to help us fill in those.
You're the experts in your communities, and we can look at maps all day and layer information on top of each other and say, we think that this is an area, but until we have that lived experience and that, boots on the ground view of things.
And this planning grant might be, hey, to hire somebody part-time to actually go out and find this.
South Central has been very aggressive here in King County, Garfield.
Very good.
And they are. A number of the providers are, and it's pretty exciting.
A lot of things, small communities trying to connect every house. So.
But I do know, and
they're ahead of the curve.
And mentioning that, so for example, in Beaver County, I know this is touchy.
It's not touchy, but it is.
Oh, good. So South Central's there, and they have said, because I sat in a meeting with them, they said, we're going to do this area. But this area out here, it's just like, we can't pencil. We cannot do that, and we're not going to do it. Well, that's what this grant will be. This incentive will be, hey, here's this funding that we'll be able to make it work.
Push a little further.
Yeah, we know this hasn't been feasible for you in the past, but now we have this bucket of money and this opportunity to do it.
Good.
Don't give any money to Salt Lake City or county, because they will say, oh, Liberty Park, it's rural. No, it isn't. They'll say that.
That's a good point, because some of the things, often as we talk about infrastructure, but this digital equity also includes, can your folks afford it? You know, you may have it, but can they afford it? There's a federal program, and we're also sending this message out. It's called the Affordable Connectivity Program. I've got some more flyers. I'll pass those out to you, too. But it's $30 a month subsidy for those households, 200% poverty level, lower, and other like SNAP, Medicaid, school lunch program that they can get. Other things, do they have the devices? Do they know how to use it? So there are programs. You can use some of this funding, and if you have some nonprofits or if you have some champions in your community that would like to apply for these funds, set up a spot in your community center or this, the co-working space you're talking about. Have a designated place or person to be able to help is teach. Help people to sign up for these programs in your libraries. These are just different ideas, but we have this funding and we need to get it out to you. It's not, the state's not going to run these programs, it's the local communities.
And it is, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity that we have here, and it's not going to happen with just us. It'll take your relationships with ISPs, it'll take, you know, it'll take your counties, it'll take everyone to kind of utilize this to the best of our ability.
Get us involved.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Gary, we're going to go to the public hearing for Fife County. You want to describe it before I open it for the...
I'll just do it as part of the public hearing. I'll just explain it.
Okay, I'm gonna declare opening of a public hearing for Fife County AOG application to the Utah Permanent Community Impact Fund Board.
I'll second it.
We make a motion.
Okay.
So what our project, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier, but now that we're formally in the public hearing, we're going to have applied, but this is to solicit comments because we can modify the application as needed if there's comments, suggestions, or anything regarding the project. This project is to remodel, do renovations, and an addition to the back of our building, which will be freestanding, as well as other site improvements, which includes mainly stormwater drainage. We've got our drainage system, as it was built 20 years ago, is not functional, and so the rainwater just collects on both sides of the building and just puddles up until it has a chance to evaporate. So there's that project in it too. I'll go back to the description of the project. The problems that we're going to address, one of those is employee safety. We have had audits done by the St. George Police Department at our office building, and the concern was that we have open hallways which go down to each end of the building. Our restrooms were built at each end of the building, so when the public comes to meetings there, and a lot of you have been to meetings there, you have to walk past all the open cubicle areas to get to the restrooms. So what we're going to do is we're going to put doorways in each hallway with keypads so that we'll have areas that are private, I shouldn't say private, our employee work areas, and then we'll have public areas, which will be the front lobby, the back lobby, which is connected to that, as well as the conference room and our break room, which has the drinking water machine in that. So the public areas will be in that area. To accommodate that, we're going to be adding a restroom in our front lobby. We have receptionist area that is way too big for the receptionist, so half of that will be turned into a restroom, and the plans are in your packet as well, and if you wanted to see that. The restroom will be available for the public to use without having to ask where the restroom is. I'll just point right there. The receptionist will be in an enclosed room that it won't feel like they're in a box, because the corner, the way the architects designed it, will have a glass corner to the room, and will have sliding glass windows so that when the public comes there, they'll have a little bit of separation. Right now, the receptionist is just out in the open. So those are for security reasons, is having public areas and employee work areas. We have a lot of employees, like I mentioned, case managers are there. They come back after going out and visiting with clients in the field. They'll work there into the evening and doing their reports, and they feel unsecured because somebody, if they do come into the building, could wander around even though the doors are locked. It's just one more level of security. We have a need for critical additional storage because we're going to be losing part of that by turning our library, which has been a storage area, into an outside building. So we'll have approximately, it's 253 square foot freestanding building on the north. And it'll be climate controlled with a Mitsubishi type split system in there to keep it warm in the wintertime and cool in the summertime. As I mentioned, we have the sewer renovations, which will be to replace the sewer pipe that's in there. There's about a 40-foot length of that that has to be cut out of the floor. So we're going to have to cut the concrete floor in our office, replace the ticket pipe out, recompact it, put a new pipe in, and pour new concrete in there. It's going to be a mess. It's going to be noisy, but that's just what you have to do. There's no other solution to that. The lighting in our building is 20 years old. It's fluorescent tubes. There are 4 tubes per fluorescent fixture. We have 90 of those in the office. The ballast used to be about $29 to replace a ballast. We've had those going out on a regular basis. They are now over $100 a pop for a ballast for those because they do not manufacture them anymore because nobody has fluorescent tubes anymore. And so I'm looking forward. The only solution is to replace the fixtures with a LED panel. So we're proposing replacing all of the lighting fixtures with LED panels that have a estimated 100,000 hours of continuous operation. That's what all modern buildings have is LEDs in them now. They're also very energy efficient, so our energy efficiency of the lights will be about 25% of what we're spending on power right now for lights will be because of the LED efficiency. So as I mentioned, we'll be doing a new restroom in the front lobby, enclosing the receptionist area in a secure receptionist room with a customer service counter. We'll have 3 hallway security corridor security doors with keypad access, separating the public spaces and employee work areas. We'll be connecting the new lobby restroom to the existing sewer line while they have the repair being done. So it's right convenient to the doing that while that floor is cut open to put that restroom up front. We'll be framing in the current library into 2 additional enclosed office rooms and 2 flex office cubicle spaces. Those 2 flex cubicle spaces will have room for 4 employees. There's 1 on each corner of those on each side. We'll be taking out one of the existing storage closets in the eastern part of the building, which is just north of the existing server room, and we'll be expanding the server room. No one anticipated 20 years ago that we'd have the amount of equipment that we have in there now. We've got an alarm system, we've got the phone system, we've got the all of our servers, and we've got camera system in there. It's overloading the ability to keep that cool, and it's too. If you have 2 service techs come in there, they can't function in that small space. So we're going to expand that, doubling the size of the server room. But we're going to replace that storage space with the new storage outside. So it's a plus win on that. I mentioned the lights, and the drainage system. When our building was built, it was the first building in that entire development, and the city required us to retain, shortly when the water would come into the down the gutters and that on our property, we had to detain it while that initial flood came, or water came down, and then slowly put it into the wash. Since that time, they have enlarged the wash because of the rest of the development happening. The wash is about 4 times deeper than it was, and it's lined with rock now. The water can go straight into the wash. Well, what happened is they built this system behind our building where they lined it with fabric and then put in large rocks in there, and it's about 200 feet long, about 7 feet deep, and about 14 feet across, and it's wrapped in fabric. The water comes into one end of it, goes into there, and it's the voids between those 8-inch rocks that stores the water, and then it slowly lets it drain out. Well, the problem is the top of that fabric has dissolved. All the dirt that was on top has collapsed into it, so it's non-functional. So that is going to be removed, but they're going to have to be in there anyway to dig that out to put the new building in and do the foundation. So that's all of the project on there. Our cost estimate for this whole thing with the new construction, the replacement of the sewer pipe, all the mechanical, electrical, and everything, including a 15% contingency, will be $739,000. And so that's what our request is. We are fortunate that we got our building 20 years ago. It's held up very well, with the exception of the sewer and functionality was designed for 20 years ago. It's like when you build a house, you don't get the modern features. You don't get the open floor plan. Well, that's where we're at now. We're thinking we did a reasonable project here. We think it's, we're not asking for the Taj Mahal. We're trying to make our building functional for another 20 years. So.
Who was your original architect?
Our architect was Kim Campbell of Campbell Associates.
Original.
The original was Les Stoker. He passed away just recently.
I know Les, really.
Yeah. And he actually did a very good job on it. The building structurally has held up very well. The problem with sewer pipe, that's Washington County for you. Our soils are just that way. You
but hurry and vote before I change my mind.
Well, okay. It's a public hearing, so I'm going to listen to the public. Anybody have any comments, questions, concerns about the project? You ought to be up to speed. We've heard it twice now. We heard it for the CIB, and we've heard it now for the public hearing, so everybody ought to know and understand it.
I have a question. Does this have to go on the public website? I mean, on, like, the open...
The notice for this?
The notice.
It was. Yeah, the hearing was noticed separately as a hearing, and this steering committee was noticed.
Okay.
Both of them were publicly, properly noticed, so...
So, anybody have any public comment?
And we gave the public also the Zoom and said specifically for the hearing, they can call in on the Zoom if they so desire, so.
Just don't know if the regulations for this committee.
Okay,
thanks.
Okay.
Well,
we don't need a motion. If nobody's wanting to comment, I'm gonna close the public hearing. We're gonna move along. 5 and 6 county congressional briefing follow-up. There's really not a lot to follow up other than the fact that we had those people out here in August. It was, to me, very successful. They went back. I had an opportunity to fly out in September. I needed a meeting with Congressman Ed Case from Hawaii and Congressman Chris Stewart. And because of the relationships we built, a member of Ed Case's staff came out to the congressional briefing. I was able to get in touch with him. He got me a personal meeting with the congressman and Chris Stewart at the same time. That's very rare. Anyway, that's the benefit of having our five and six county congressional briefing. So,
how many came out, Jerry?
There was about 20.
20.
Yeah. And plus we. Congressman Burgess Owens spent
2 days with us.
2 days with us, yeah. So it's a big deal, and it's great. So I will ask for you your continued support for this as we go forward. We're already in the planning stages for next year.
How do we follow up with them? Do we send out a letter? Thanks for coming out. By the way, our issues will continue long after you've forgotten about us. But would you please continue to keep them at the top of your agenda or something?
You know what's amazing is when they come out here, there's one day that we spend on Monday. We start traveling down through the state. At the end of the day, we end up at Johnson Ranch by Salina. And it's wonderful. They get to meet the family there, especially the little boys and little girls that are great cowgirls and cowboys. Anyway, they're given the opportunity to listen to the family and how they live. They're also given a chance to learn how to ride a four-wheeler, ride a horse, and shoot a gun. It's amazing what response you get. Then the next day, they actually get to go riding ATVs and UTVs. It's amazing how much they love it, especially riding out on public land. So they get to see the whole gamut, and it's amazing what they learn. We have staff here. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. So when we first met these staffers that came out, it was a pretty hardcore group, and I was skeptical at first about this particular group we got out. Some of the comments that were being made, even as we were pulling into the ranch, there was a girl in the back of the bus that was sitting behind me. She made a comment, I won't repeat it, but it was pretty derogatory towards rural people. After we got done at the ranch, everyone's attitude has completely changed. And that is the benefit of having these staffers come out, because most of them, they're from the coast. They do not know what rural life is about. And so when they came out here, they had their guard up. They thought they were going to be preached to or trying to propagandize. But especially when we go to that ranch, they get to actually meet rural Utah. And they get to experience what rural Utah actually is. They get to understand what our values are and why we do the things that we do. And all the things that they hear from the media on the coast, all the things they're bombarded with from all of the non-governmental organizations, all of that goes away and they actually get to understand what rural Utah is about. And so they may not agree with us, may not join our side on everything, but at least they come away with a much better understanding and they see that we're not these evil people that just want to destroy our environment. It just totally changed the mindset of the moment. So as you said, Commissioner,
good.
But that was the value of it.
And we love teaming up with Six County.
Were there any returns that come from the year before? Or were they all new?
No, they're all new.
All new.
Yeah. Yeah, every year it's a new group that comes out.
Yeah.
And then the goal is to eventually do like a family reunion back in Washington, D.C.
In February we'll do that.
Yeah, and have all of them from all the groups that have come out to come meet at Capitol Hill.
I'm friends with about a dozen of them on social media after that trip, too. I think that not only did their perspective change, but the relationships that we made on that trip, I think, will pay dividends for the state of Utah for a long time to come.
Well, let's keep it up. Good job.
That's good. These guys, our staff back there, they make a huge difference with them.
Do they sign up or do you pick and choose?
I'm not part of that process.
We have a committee that we send out. We kind of hand pick really who, you know, they have a priority, you know.
Like a natural resource committee, an energy committee.
Yeah, that's good. So, okay, let's go to congressional staff update. We have 20 minutes to complete this meeting. And if we can go home early, it's even better. So,
can you come up here to this side over here?
Where
are
the ladies go first?
We always defer to the Senate.
Come on.
Let's
rock, paper.
She's stronger than you are, Angie. She outlasted
you. I've been married for 16 years.
Yeah, he knew when to jump up, didn't he?
Yeah, smart guy.
Is this a good place for me to stand? Everybody hear me online? I'm just going to start talking. Government funding has been extended until December 16th. Senator Lee would have preferred that it went past the election. Now we're going to have a lame duck session, which is always dangerous for the country, especially given all the spending. He and 17 other senators sent a letter to leadership strongly urging them to at least kick, if they're going to kick the can, kick it down into the next election. That didn't happen, so Congress will be back in session in mid-December to try to hammer out a spending bill. Senator Lee has been very involved in efforts to curtail online child exploitation. He's had an opportunity to work on those issues on the Judiciary Committee and also in the Commerce Committee. Utah law enforcement has reported that since 2020, we've had a 600% increase in child exploitation-related cases, child sexual abuse cases in Utah alone. Nationally, there's a figure of a 35% increase in child online pornography. So it's becoming an epidemic, basically. So Senator Lee he's worked with the CEOs of Instagram, Facebook, all these places to try to get them to tighten up their restrictions. He's actually had some success in the past few weeks. Also, he just recently introduced a bill called the Protect Act. What that would do is it would require all pornography sites to acquire consent from people who are uploading content and from anyone who is depicted in the content. They have to get consent and a verified form proving that these participants are not minors, that they are of age to make those decisions. We got a letter signed by 200 survivors of online child exploitation urging members of Congress to sign on to the bill. We're hoping we can get some movement on that next year. The Senate passed the Kigali Treaty, which is a treaty, international treaty, that would require countries to reduce and eventually phase out their use of hydrofluorocarbons. They're used in refrigeration technologies. Senator Lee voted against it. He thinks that's more of a market-based thing. Government shouldn't be involved. But one of the successes he had, so in the original treaty, as it was going to be ratified, it would identify China as a developing country and exempt them from any of the regulations. Senator Lee and Senator Sullivan from Alaska introduced an amendment that would strip out that provision so that China has to abide by all the rules that America and all the other developing nations of the world have to go up against, and that amendment passed 96-0. Also, Senator Lee was successful in getting, so he got his Formula Act passed, which would reduce restrictions on imports of baby formula. That didn't do anything for our domestic producers. So Senator Lee worked too with members of the Senate and the House, both parties, got basically a Formula Act 2.0 passed that would make it easier for us to import the powder that our domestic producers use to make baby formula. So now we can actually get our domestic production of baby formula up quickly. President Biden signed that bill into law just a few weeks ago. Also for this group, especially for Kane and Garfield counties, the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, they have put out calls for nominations for the Monument Advisory Committee. Commissioner Taylor, they're looking for an elected official from Garfield County, one from Kane County. They're also looking for a grazing permittee that operates in the monument to be on this advisory committee. They've got 5 or 6 open positions they're looking for nominations for. So I would encourage...
Guide and Outfitter, I think, too.
Yep, Guide and Outfitter, yep. They're looking for someone with knowledge in
natural resources. They're wanting to do with recreation, and they're wanting to get a Guide and Outfitter. I question that because I see it flipping one of our spots.
Well, that's why we need to get someone good in that position. So if you've got nominees, people that want to be nominated or that you want to nominate, please let the congressional delegation know that
we will have a group. Yes.
All right.
You and Leland.
Actually, Commissioner Tabbs will re-up Commissioner Tabbs.
Okay.
And hopefully Andy Yant as well.
Yeah, I think if my ducks are on the election, I'll reapply as well if they'll let me.
Okay, sounds good. That's all I've got. If there's any questions.
Thank you.
Good job, Heath.
Sincerely. Oh, you guys are like.
I just want to double down on how successful the congressional meeting was. A handful of those guys are going to come back and hike Zion, and again, those relationships are going to be invaluable going forward. Likewise, I want to echo Heath's comments on the Monument Advisory Committee. It would be wonderful to have some voices on that committee that could balance out the prevailing perspective, if you will. So some of our people on there would be awesome. Lake Powell right now is about 4 or 5 inches away from shutting down large vessel launches on the Bullfrog ramp, and so we're watching that. That obviously has externalities for everybody in Southern Utah. We are currently working on negotiations with Democrats to amend their marriage equality bill, and we're happy with the protections for religious observation that we're getting there, but it's still likewise a work in progress. Every time I open my email in the morning, I see another announcement from DOI about infrastructure money coming to Utah for wildfire fuels mitigation and watershed restoration initiative type things, and we're just super happy to see that. Those resources are there for us to continue to use going forward, and I hope we do. Biden signed the continuing resolution to fund the government through December 16th, and Congress is out of session until mid next month, so we're going to conclude well for a few more weeks. But if there's anything I can do for you guys, let me know.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kyle.
Cindy.
Ditto, ditto. I get to be the last, so
twice in one day.
Just Congress is not in session, so as I said, we're safe for a couple weeks. We are doing another set of community project funding workshops, if anyone is interested or didn't get to go to those in the first round. Let me know, or I can send Gary, you can send it to everyone, but we're doing them a week from tomorrow, the 27th. There will be one in Cedar at 10 and one in Richfield at 3. It will be the same presentation that was done earlier. And if you can't go but you want some information, I can send you the PowerPoint. It will probably just elicit more questions, but at least you'll know what to ask. These are the old, used to be called earmarks. We don't call them those, but it's in essence what it is. But it's one-time money that can then also, you can use that as some of your match if you force the idea for other grounds. So those are things to work, can work in conjunction. And other than that, the congressman was in Cedar, or was in St. George today. He will be in Cedar tonight for an unofficial event. So if you know what that means, I can't really talk about that, but he will be in Cedar tonight at 6 o'clock in this building. Thank you.
Great, thanks.
Thanks.
Any other, do we have any other, anybody online, Gary, for that?
We've got Andy again. Kelly Stoll is there. Maybe Kelly's got something to add. He's been on there.
Kelly? Let's go to state.
Hey, I'm just listening. I'm just listening in. Thank you.
It's nice to have you with me, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Dave, do you have something for us?
Nothing really has changed in our employment situation, right? All of our counties are between 2 and 2.3% unemployment rate, with the exception of Garfield. 5.9, I don't know what's going on over there.
I hate losing at anything.
that's just the nature. It's always been that way, right? It's always been relatively higher than all the rest of the counties. And I think that's because of the tourism and the seasonality of some of this stuff.
Those people don't want to work, though.
Well, we want to give them every opportunity, right?
Right, because there is a, we're always looking for people.
Well, it's just, I don't know, it's a tough nut to crack, right?
Yep.
Because
yep.
The pandemic and everybody, you know, with all of the remote work opportunities, there's a ton of remote work opportunities, right? So we're looking at ways actually to see if we can brainstorm some things to maybe flatten some of the seasonal unemployment that we see over there. Well, everywhere actually with remote work and some of those things that we can do. In fact, next month we've got a brainstorming mastermind session with Innovation Plaza folks and SUU and some of our education providers to see what we can do to help job seekers understand how to take advantage of remote work and how to progress in a remote work environment. You know, a lot of times we have the opportunity to you know, network, and when we're working in person, we expand our network, and opportunities often arise because of that, right? And if we're remote, we don't know if that really affects our ability to promote and launch our career, right?
Yeah.
So looking at ways, and then also looking at things that we can provide, education that we can provide for businesses on how to more effectively take advantage of remote work, and this idea of portable work might help some place like Garfield County, right? If we can port work into Garfield County for those that want it, and they can do well with that, right, then that can maybe ease some burden somewhere else around the state. So looking at that, last week we held a job fair in Beaver County. It was a small job fair, but we had, you know, a dozen employers or so there. We had job seekers there, and And even though it was small, we made some good connections. We had ACOR there, Blue Core Labs is starting up there. They're going to break ground next week. And they were able to connect with some folks during that job fair last week. So I think overall it was a good experience. I don't know, Commissioner, if you've got anything to add to that, but.
No, I just appreciate it. You know, I think it'll be some things that we learned too, you know, going forward to the next job fair that we're looking at in January. So I think it's a, just we appreciate your support and help there.
Yeah, that'll be good. So yeah, we'll gear up and we'll do hopefully it'll be even better.
Yeah.
In January. We're also working to get connected with Smithfield and get in front of their employees that may be dislocated at some point between now and January. And we'll offer, what we want to do is just brief their employees with the employment services that we have to offer and help connect them the best way we can. So that's what we've got going on. But other than that, I don't really have anything new to update unless there's any questions or anything I do for you guys and gals.
You know, my daughter works online, and she went through that ROI program, mm-hmm. and she actually works for two different contractors. One of them is from here in Utah, but the other one is out of San Francisco, and she makes like $29 an hour from home, and live in a little cabiona, I mean, and raise her family. That's a big deal.
Huge deal.
Yeah.
And that's why this broadband effort too is pretty important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we can
huge deal.
Yep. Help people take advantage of that. So.
Yep. It's all good. Anyway, okay. Appreciate it.
David, great. Yeah,
thanks.
Okay. Anything else?
Just one real quick. Next month, we'll be meeting on November 9th, and the governor's office will have representation here having a conversation on growth. Commissioner Almquist was there yesterday with them. My question to you is St. George where you would like it, or would you like it?
It's Hurricane.
Hurricane?
Ooh, that was quick.
Okay.
I was just throwing
so the question is, where would you like?
Where is it scheduled?
It's in St. George at our building, but I don't know if it's going to be big enough.
Yeah, let's do it somewhere else.
Yeah.
You guys want to come
is
up with
is your building going to be
know.
Done? We can have it in our council chambers.
Is it big enough? Like, you were there yesterday too, Mayor.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's a good location. The council chambers is good.
If we have it here, that'll bring us to our community.
Mm-hmm. But also have it here.
It's up to...
I'm fine to do whatever.
It's up to you.
If we have it here, let's have it at three different locations.
Sorry, Commissioner.
It's a shorter drive for you to come here for me, so...
Right,
so
that might be easier.
Is that the direction? We'll just have it here then in Cedar for next month so we can have that? Okay.
This will be available.
All right. Okay. All right, we'll do that.
And if you can't get it scheduled here, let's go to Hurricane.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fine, but I understand that it is further. People travel, yeah. And I'm totally for that. I'm fine to travel.
And it's an important conversation, and I want to make sure the region has their voice heard in it. Okay, so we'll plan on coming here. Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Gary, on these plans submitted by Jones and Campbell, mm-hmm. It calls for a peaking floor. Is HR okay with that?
As long as they don't peak too
long.
If they peak too long, if they peak too long, it'll be considered harassment.
He just talks about that filler so fast, you know.
Pretend. I agree. Good job, E.
Commissioner, I was so tempted to put all of your puns from the last meeting in there, but I thought better of that. So.
You know, Gary, start
he
making
refrained.
A book.
You can't delete them.
Make a book.
Yeah.
Or, this is
we got them recorded.
Yeah. Of his puns.
Can't select.
There's nobody quicker. Well, nobody quicker once he gets to the meeting.
Oh, that gave you
that.
Gail's book of puns.
Yeah.
I still have the cola. When we were in Beaver.
Okay.
Henry has to be excused today. So.
Okay, do we have anybody else from universities? I was going to skip.
SUU is not here as well. So.
SUU did a fabulous job last week with the Rural Summit.
It's good. Yeah, it was really good.
Other than breakfast was really, not the food, but the seating was cold.
It
took me half a day to warm up. Took me to lunch. Anyway, thanks everybody for coming. I'm going to declare this adjourned.
Great job, Chair. 5 minutes before 2.
5 minutes early.
Thank